In the lush fantasy world of the Seven Kingdoms, where knights battle dragons and magic flows through ancient runes, Sooji Kim's Under the Oak Tree has captivated readers worldwide with its poignant tale of self-discovery. This debut novel in Kim's series became an instant sensation after winning the Romance Web Novel Award from South Korean ebook platform Readi, later expanding its reach through a wildly popular webtoon adaptation. The story's exploration of trauma, healing, and unexpected love has resonated deeply with readers who see themselves in Maximilian's journey from abuse victim to a woman discovering her own worth. What makes this medieval fantasy romance particularly compelling is how it balances intense emotional vulnerability with the excitement of magical adventure, creating a reading experience that feels both escapist and profoundly human. Maximilian Calypso waits anxiously in her father's drawing room, biting her nails as she prepares to face her husband for the first time in 3 years. Her father, the Duke of Kroiso, enters and immediately berates her for this nervous habit, warning her not to embarrass the family when Riften returns. Despite her stutter, she promises to persuade him to stay in their marriage, only to be struck with her father's cane when she tries to explain that Riften left immediately after their wedding. The truth behind their hasty marriage becomes clear. The Duke had arranged it solely to avoid joining the campaign against the Red Dragon Sector. Now Riften has returned as a celebrated hero who defeated that very dragon, and the Duke fears he'll seek an annulment, bringing shame to the Kroiso name. When Riften arrives, he finds Maxie trembling before him. He sarcastically comments on her fearful demeanor and pulls her close, demanding she at least pretend to be happy to see him. His proximity triggers memories of their wedding night when he had commanded her to undress, revealing his powerful physique. Maxie had been terrified, knowing only that she must obey her husband without question. The tension between them escalates when Riften announces she's coming with him to his estate. Despite her protests about needing her father's permission, Riften declares, "You are my wife. Why must I seek anyone's permission to take you with me?" He places her in a carriage and they depart immediately, beginning a journey that will transform both their lives. During their travels, they confront misunderstandings about their 3-year separation. Riften accuses Maxie of disregarding their marriage vows by staying at her father's castle, while she insists she knew nothing about his expectations. Their argument is interrupted when ogres attack the carriage, and Maxie witnesses Riften's terrifying combat prowess as he cleaves an ogre in two. The horrific sight causes her to vomit before fainting in shock. Maxie awakens in a modest roadside inn to find Riften's intense gaze fixed upon her, a sight both thrilling and unnerving. The wooden beams creak overhead as afternoon light filters through dusty windows, creating an intimate atmosphere. Their shared meal begins awkwardly, with Maxie picking at her food until Riften breaks the tension with an unexpected confession. He had rejected Princess Agnes's marriage proposal, choosing instead to honor his commitment to Maxie. The revelation sends her heart racing, forcing her to reevaluate everything she thought she knew about their arrangement. Despite her lingering nervousness about physical intimacy, memories of their rushed wedding night still fresh in her mind, Riften demonstrates remarkable patience. He gently pulls her onto his lap, his calloused hands surprisingly tender as they explore her body. The contrast between the fierce warrior she knows and this gentle lover leaves her breathless. "Relax," he whispers against her ear, his warm breath sending shivers down her spine as he guides her through waves of pleasure she never knew possible. Gone is the pain and fear from their first night together, replaced by an awakening of sensations that leaves her trembling. Though initially mortified by her own responses, Maxie finds herself surrendering to the experience, achieving her first climax in Riften's arms. His subsequent confession that thoughts of her consumed him during their years apart reveals a vulnerability she never expected from the Stoic Knight. The admission creates a new bridge of understanding between them, hinting at deeper emotions neither has yet dared to name. Their journey resumes through vast stretches of farmland, the autumn air crisp with possibility. By nightfall, they reach a small village on the outskirts of Utica Forest, where accommodations prove scarce. Rifton's diplomatic skills shine as he negotiates with the village guard, securing space in a communal barn. Though the setting lacks luxury, hay scattered across the floor and the murmur of soldiers all around him, Maxie discovers comfort in Rifton's protective embrace, his body forming a shield between her and the world. As they traverse monster-infested territories, Maxie observes Rifton in his element, commanding his knights with natural authority. His men's unwavering loyalty speaks volumes about his character. They follow not just their commander, but a leader they trust with their lives. During brief respites, Rifton reveals his softer side, massaging Maxie's saddle-sore legs with strong, careful hands. Though she flushes at such public displays of affection, his touch speaks of genuine care rather than mere possession. In quiet moments between marching, Rifton steals passionate kisses behind ancient trees, his restraint evident in the tension of his muscles. "You test my control," he confesses against her lips, the admission carrying weight after years of separation. These tender moments stand in sharp contrast to their wedding night, revealing a man far more complex than the cold, demanding knight who claimed her 3 years ago. Through each interaction, Maxie begins to glimpse the depth of Rifton's feelings and perhaps the possibility of true love growing between them. After an arduous journey through rugged terrain, they finally crest a windswept mountain to behold Anatol, a formidable village protected by towering stone walls that stretch into the distance. Above it all looms the legendary Calypso Castle, an architectural marvel carved into the mountainside in the shape of an ancient golem, its weathered facade telling tales of centuries past. As they approach the massive oak gates, reinforced with iron, the air suddenly fills with thunderous cheers. Villagers pour into the streets, their voices unified in passionate cries of "Rosam Wegru Calypso, the incarnation of Wegru," hailing Rifton as the living embodiment of their mythical hero. The reception strikes Maxie to her core, creating a stark contrast with memories of her father's fortress. Where Croy Castle had been a tomb of silence and fear, Anatol pulses with life. Children dart between market stalls, merchants call out greetings, and even the guards smile warmly at their returning lord. This place, with its unpretentious vigor and genuine affection for its master, embodies everything her childhood home had suffocated. Their arrival at the castle, however, shatters the joyous mood. Rifton's face darkens as he surveys the great hall, his fury building at finding his explicit orders for renovation ignored. Dust coats the stone floors, tapestries hang in tatters, and windows remain unwashed, a far cry from the welcoming home he'd envisioned for his bride. When exhaustion overwhelms Maxie, Rifton sweeps her into his arms without hesitation, carrying her through torchlit corridors to their bedchamber. Unlike the castle's general disarray, this room shows careful preparation. Fresh linens, polished furniture, and sweet-smelling flowers suggest Rifton's personal attention to her comfort. His embarrassment at the castle's condition manifests in passionate assurances. She'll have unlimited access to the treasury, authority over all servants, complete freedom to transform their home however she desires. Maxie accepts this responsibility while carefully guarding her secret, that she was no cherished noble daughter, but a despised burden, untrained in household management. After sharing an intimate bath, where Rifton's calloused hands prove surprisingly gentle as he washes her travel-weary body, she drifts to sleep in his protective embrace, daring to imagine a future where their arranged marriage might bloom into something real. Morning finds her alone in their bed, where she meets Ludus, her newly appointed lady's maid who helps her don an exquisite golden gown. Determined to understand her new domain, Maxie meets with Rodrigo, the castle steward, whose detailed reports reveal the full scope of the challenge ahead. The banquet hall echoes emptily, its long tables gathering dust. Drawing rooms sit cold and uninviting, their fireplaces long dead. The once magnificent gardens have surrendered to wilderness, and the existing staff of 87 struggles against impossible odds to maintain over 200 rooms. Yet as Maxie surveys her new kingdom, determination replaces intimidation. With careful planning and additional staff, she resolves to breathe life back into these ancient stones, transforming this warrior's fortress into a home worthy of its legacy. Left alone after Riften returns to his duties, Maxie struggles to adapt to her role as Lady of Calyp's Castle. She explores the castle with Rodrigo, attempting to understand estate management despite her lack of experience. When meeting with Merchant Guild head Adaron Sumner about castle renovations, she's overwhelmed but tries to hide her uncertainty. After examining glass samples and fabrics, she selects expensive rose-colored curtains with gold tassels for the banquet hall, along with a red carpet and tapestry depicting the legendary knight Wigru. Later, the tailor Roan Selos and his wife arrive to measure Maxie for new dresses as promised by Riften. Though initially excited by the prospect of elegant clothes, Maxie feels ridiculous in the oversized headdress they have her try on, requesting something smaller before ordering three new dresses. In the evening, Maxie learns Riften must soon depart for the royal capital. Overhearing an argument between him and his knights, she discovers they're pressuring him to attend a ceremony with King Reuben, who apparently wishes to match Riften with Princess Agnes. Worried about being alone at the castle and feeling unworthy of Riften's affection, Maxie retreats to her room. When Riften joins her later, he reassures her about the renovations and promises to bring gifts from the capital. Their conversation turns intimate as he expresses reluctance to leave her, and they share a passionate night together. The next morning, they continue their lovemaking, with Riften expressing his deep attraction to her vulnerable beauty. Their intimacy deepens as they spend a rainy day together, sharing meals in bed and making love repeatedly. Riften shows a tender, possessive devotion that Maxie has never experienced before, leaving her feeling transformed and cherished for the first time in her life. As the rain subsides, Riften prepares to depart for the royal capital. Despite her exhaustion from their passionate night, Maxie rises to see him before he leaves. At the training grounds, she overhears Riften discussing travel arrangements with his knights. When Gable volunteers to remain behind to protect Anatol, Riften insists all knights who fought in the Dragon Campaign must attend the celebration. After Riften's departure, Maxie falls ill with fever for 2 days, her body finally succumbing to exhaustion. Once recovered, she begins overseeing castle renovations, determined to prove herself worthy as Lady Calypso. Each day brings meetings with merchants, artisans, and landscapers as she approves purchases and supervises construction. Late into each night, Maxie struggles to record expenses in the ledger, her inexperience with accounting evident. When Ruth, the castle's acerbic sorcerer, discovers her in the library, he harshly criticizes her bookkeeping and excessive spending, pointing out calculation errors and unnecessary purchases. Mortified by her mistakes and worried about depleting Riften's fortune, Maxie pleads for help. "I'll help you fix this mess," Ruth sighs, "but be here at dawn tomorrow." Maxie arrives at sunrise, finding Ruth already there, having slept in the corner. Together they review her purchases, with Ruth pointing out numerous errors, mistaking Lirum for Darum, ordering unnecessary marble flooring and extravagant crystal fountains and glass windows. He explains these luxuries are impractical for Anatol's climate and the knight's training grounds. Ruth patiently teaches her currency conversions, showing her different coins, lirum, dirham, soldum, dinar, and explaining their values and exchange rates. He reveals Riften's wealth includes 160 rare Dant coins, ancient Romian currency made of orichalcum, and shares how Riften built the castle using just 40 of these precious coins. When the merchant Adiran arrives, Maxie successfully cancels the unnecessary orders despite his persuasive attempts. Later, Ruth helps her record the transactions properly in the ledger, correcting her numerous mistakes with stern patience as they prepare to renovate the gardens for spring. When Maxie proposes removing a dead oak tree by the pavilion, Ruth warns her against it, explaining Anatolians believe nymphs inhabit trees. He reveals the special significance of this particular oak. According to legend, Sir Rosam Wigru, the hero who flew across the sky on a dragon, fell in love with the nymph of this very tree. The locals believe she still waits for his return, making the tree sacred. Understanding the cultural importance, Maxie reluctantly abandons her plan. Ruth offers to try reviving the tree with mana, suggesting they spread word that the lady of the castle is attempting to restore the sacred oak, a gesture that would earn her the servants' respect. The castle renovations proceed smoothly, with marble tiles replacing flagstones in the banquet hall, new mahogany shutters on windows, and crystal glass installed in the main rooms as Ruth suggested. The servants work cheerfully, excited by the castle's transformation. Maxie's peaceful management of the estate is shattered when Rodrigo bursts in with alarming news. 30 armed knights, led by a man claiming to be Rob Madahas, a Livedonian nobleman, are at their gates without proper identification. As the confrontation escalates, Madahas mocks Anatol as a den of cowards without their lord. When Sir Oberon draws his sword in fury, Madahas launches a massive flame that destroys the castle gate. Ruth tries to hold the invaders back with wind barriers while Sir Oberon leaps into battle, but Maxie finds herself pushed to the ground and defenseless amid the chaos. Just when all seems lost, the Rem Dragon Knights thunder down the hill, led by Riften himself. His mere presence changes everything. The once confident Livedonians grow pale as Riften calmly threatens war for their trespass. Despite Ruth's diplomatic warnings about starting conflict with an entire kingdom, Riften forces Madahas and his men to surrender and imprisons them. Furious at finding Maxie in danger, Riften carries her back to the castle. In their chambers, his anger transforms to passionate concern as he examines her for injuries, vowing to sever a head for every scratch he finds on her. When Maxie admits she doesn't want him leaving for war again, Riften's fury melts into desire, and they surrender to their passion after 3 weeks apart. Their lovemaking is intense and desperate, with Riften still in his armor at first, then continuing even after he removes it. Maxie, overcome with need, clings to him desperately, wanting him closer still as they find release together. Riften surprises Maxie with a series of extravagant gifts, beginning with a stunning white mare whose gentle temperament and graceful bearing instantly capture her heart. The horse's coat gleams like fresh snow, its mane silky and well-groomed. When Riften lifts her onto the saddle and kisses her tenderly in front of the watching merchants, Maxie buries her flushed face in the horse's flowing mane, overwhelmed by this public display of affection. Back at their chambers, Riften reveals an even more staggering surprise, 32 ornate chests delivered from various merchant caravans. The servants methodically display their contents, shimmering silks from the eastern kingdoms, luxurious furs from the northern territories, intricate jewelry crafted by master artisans, and countless other treasures that transform their room into a merchant's showroom. With visible pride, Riften selects pieces to adorn his wife. Emerald-studded hairpins that catch the light with every movement, diamond necklaces that rest perfectly against her collarbone, and golden bracelets inlaid with precious gems. Though she smiles and expresses gratitude, Maxie's heart races with anxiety. She feels like an actress in a play, desperately pretending to be the sophisticated noblewoman who deserves such luxuries. When Riften explains these gifts are meant to replace what she left behind at Croeso Castle, shame and fear twist in her stomach. If he knew the truth, that she owned nothing more valuable than simple cotton dresses at her father's estate, would his generosity turn to disappointment? The following day brings an unexpected discovery in the castle library, an ancient tome of healing remedies, its pages yellowed but well-preserved. Though written in the ancient tongue, Maxie finds herself drawn to its mysterious contents, even as she struggles with unfamiliar technical terms and archaic phrasing. When Ruth returns from tending to sentries wounded in a recent werewolf attack, he's visibly impressed by her ability to decipher the ancient text. However, rather than encouraging her medical studies, Ruth suggests an unexpected path, magic. He explains that her natural mana affinity, combined with her knowledge of arithmetic and the ancient language, makes her an ideal candidate for magical training. His eyes light up with scholarly enthusiasm as he tells her, "You could become a proper mage with training. Your foundation is remarkably strong." Maxie's heart soars at these words. Finally, someone sees potential in her beyond her role as Riften's wife. She eagerly accepts Ruth's offer to teach her, though his first lecture on magical theory leaves her head spinning with complex concepts about mana flow and elemental resonance. When she expresses doubt, Ruth adjusts his approach, breaking down the fundamentals of how mages channel natural mana into spells. He gives her a smooth, blue-tinted stone to practice developing her magical sensitivity. Despite the challenging path ahead, Maxie throws herself into her studies with determination. She dreams of the day she might join Riften on his expeditions, not as a burden to protect, but as a capable sorceress fighting by his side. In her private moments, she imagines mastering spells that would make her truly worthy of being his partner, both in life and in battle. As winter deepens, Riften spends more time at the castle, training sentries in the morning and conducting reconnaissance in the afternoon, but always returning by dusk to dine with Maxie. Their increased time together reveals his character. He disdains luxury and nobility's extravagance, preferring practical, durable clothing over finery. Despite his own austere tastes, he lavishes Maxie with luxuries, seemingly determined to prove himself worthy of a duke's daughter. When Riften discovers she's studying magic under Ruth, he erupts in anger, shouting that he doesn't need her help. His vehemence shocks Maxie, and though he eventually relents with, "Do as you please," he storms out of the castle. Maxie waits anxiously for his return, confused by his outburst and pretending to sleep when he finally comes back to their chamber. Riften returns to find Maxie pretending to sleep. When she reveals herself awake, she apologizes tearfully, hurt by his claim that he doesn't need her help. Riften embraces her, assuring her she can learn magic, but struggling to explain his reaction. Their conversation transforms into passionate intimacy as Maxie boldly touches him, discovering power in his vulnerability to her touch. Despite Riften's apparent disregard for her magical studies, Maxie remains determined to prove her worth. She grows frustrated with her slow progress, confessing to Ruth that despite daily practice with the magic stone, she sees no improvement. Ruth suggests her struggles might stem from incompatibility with the fire-attuned stone, and recommends practicing outdoors, where natural elements provide greater mana concentration. Following Ruth's advice, Maxie begins practicing healing magic on willing servants and knights. She successfully heals a young servant's burned hand and tends to Knight's minor injuries, growing more confident with each success. For the first time, she feels useful, challenging her father's lifelong assertion of her worthlessness. As winter ends and spring approaches, Maxie continues her dual pursuits of managing the castle and developing her magical abilities. When a young squire named Ulysian enters the dining hall covered in blood from a training accident, Maxie immediately rushes to help him. Despite his insistence that he's fine, she cleans his wound and heals it with magic, demonstrating her improved healing abilities. Watching the knights' camaraderie as they discuss upcoming monster raids, Maxie feels jealous and isolated, knowing these men will be by Riften's side during dangerous campaigns while she remains behind. She wonders if mastering powerful magic might convince Riften to take her along, but quickly dismisses the thought, knowing his protectiveness and her own lack of courage would prevent it. Yet, as snow falls outside their window and Riften holds her close, Maxie realizes how far she's come from the terrified girl who fainted at the sight of blood. Though still uncertain of her place in this world of knights and magic, she has begun to find her voice, her purpose, and perhaps most importantly, her courage to love and be loved in return. Under the dying oak tree that stands sentinel over Calypso's castle, a new life is taking root, one where a stuttering, abused young woman might just become the powerful sorceress and confident lady she never dreamed she could be.